I once read a story about an elderly man in a shul in Brooklyn that was he knocked on the rabbi's door one day and he told the rabbi, "I want to Gilson, welcome back. I wanted to I want to donate a sefer Torah to the shul." So rabbi was looking at this guy, and he wasn't such a wealthy person. And he's not known as one of the big gevirs, one of the big bali tzedakah in the community. So he's kind of wondering, how in the world was this guy going to donate a sefer Torah? Sefer Torahs are quite a hefty investment. So the guy sees the rabbi's expression, and he says to him, "Rabbi, let me explain. Now, when I was in concentration camp, so." You can imagine what the situation was like, and the only thing that I had left from my family were my boots. And one day I was walking through the camp, and the commandant saw my boots, and he decided that he liked them and he wanted them. And in those days, those situations, that's what he wanted. So anyway, I got lucky, and the. And for some reason, the commandant was feeling nice, and he said, "You know what? I want your boots, but I'm going to trade you. I'm going to give you a pair of shoes in exchange." So you're like, "Really? Yeah." Takes off his boots, gives him the boots. The commandant goes gets the shoes. He gives the guy shoes. It looks like real shoes. And he's like, "Wow, this is really crazy." He's about to put them on, and he looks inside the shoe, and he sees that the sole of the shoe is made out of the cloth of a Sefer Torah. So he says, "What are we supposed to do now?" Because on the one hand, it's the middle of winter in Poland or Germany, wherever he was, it's the middle of winter. You need shoes. On the other hand, how in the world do you live like that? That every single step you take would be on top of a Sefer Torah. So the guy says, "I don't know if what I did was right halachically, but I said to Hashem, 'Listen, I'm going to wear the shoes, but I promise that for the rest of my life, I'm going to try to save money to make it up to the Kavanah Torah.'" And now 40 years later, after putting away pennies or nickels and dimes for the last 40 years after the Holocaust, he said, "I finally have enough money to donate a Sefer Torah so I could repay the Torah for the kavod that I stepped on for all those years when I was in the camp." Yesterday's Parsha, the most cataclysmic event in the history of the world, when God gave the Torah. Certainly the most important day in Jewish history, and Hashem decided, or whoever, in the order that the world goes, Hashem decided that Matan Torah was going to be in Parshas Yisro. So I'm sure a lot of us discussed this week what was the big deal about what Yisro did. Let's look at it objectively for a second. Moshe had too much to do. Everybody was standing around. The lines were way too long. So why didn't Moshe, who was apparently fairly smart, why didn't he have this idea on his own? Why did we need Yisro? What was the great deal about what Yisro did? That's question number one. Three questions altogether. Question number two: If we look in Sefer Devarim. So back in the day, they used to have these blue chumashim. Hebrew English, they called them, I think, Pentateuch, if that's the right way to pronounce it. And on the binding, so they had the English translation of what all the Sifrei of the Chumash were. So you had Genesis, and Exodus, and Leviticus, and Numbers, and one day we'll have to talk about why Bamidbar is Numbers, and then comes Devarim, which is Deuteronomy. Anybody know why it's called Deuteronomy? So Deutero means two, as in deuterium, which is the second isotope of hydrogen. For all those who want to be doctors, or at least respect the rabbis for knowing weird facts about hydrogen isotopes. So deutero is two, and nomos in Latin is law. And we know that the nickname for Devarim is Mishnah Torah, because in Devarim, Moshe goes over the whole entire, all the halachos, and he goes over all the entire Torah. The first law that Moshe reviews in Deuteronomy is the story that happens in yesterday's parsha about Yisro suggesting that we should have an appellate court system. But if you look in Sefer Devarim in the first parak, I'll read out of our handy dandy JPS English Tanakh. Pasuk, parak Aleph, Pasuk Tes. And I said to you, this is Moshe speaking, and I said to you, I cannot bear the burden of you by myself. The Lord Hashem has multiplied you, made you a great number of people. How can I bear unaided the trouble of you and the burden of the bickering? Pick from each of your tribes men who are wise, discerning, and experienced, and I will appoint them as your heads. And then you answered me, that's a great idea. So the people answered, what a great idea. Again, Pasuk 9. I said to you, I cannot bear the burden of you by myself. Hashem has made you too great. How can I handle it? How about we have an appellate court system? And you Jews said, great idea. What's missing from this story? Yisrael. Now Moshe had the whole Torah written in his name. He needed to steal Yisrael. Maybe they had in-law fights. I don't know what was going on. But Moshe had to steal Yisrael's glory. Yisrael had one halach in the whole Torah. And Moshe just couldn't quote. And the Gemara Megillah tells us, I think Amar Belazar, Amar Bechanina, if I'm not mistaken. Kol ha'omer davo b'shem omro mevi geula l'olam. If you quote something in somebody else's name, you bring geula to the world. Maybe Moshe didn't need geula at that point, but it's clearly an important thing. So why did Moshe have to steal Yisro's thunder and not quote him when it comes to Sefer Devarim? There's a machlokas in the Gemara, and it comes out a lot of times in Torah. Is there a chronological order to the Torah or not? One of the places that this argument shows up is in Parshas Yisro. Some people feel that the Torah is in chronology, that the story of Yisro with the appellate court system happened before Matan Torah, but some people say, no, that's not the way it really happened. Because if you think about it, what was Moshe judging the people about, and what were they lining up to ask questions about if there was no Torah yet? So they argue that, no, really the story about Yisro happened after Matan Torah, which would mean, by the way, that maybe Moshe's children and wife were not at Matan Torah, which is quite a huge statement. But maybe the Yisro story happened after Matan Torah. If it happened after Matan Torah, then why would Hashem take Yisro's story and put it before Matan Torah? If you want to talk about real estate in the Torah, so prime real estate is Parshas Yisro. Prime real estate is Har Sinai and Kabbalah Satorah. Why would God take this story out of context and put it right down before Matan Torah? So Rabbi Yechiel Spiro, touched by story number 3, tells the following story. He's trying to explain to his students about the importance of Chazara. You know, a lot of times we like to plow forward, we like to cover ground, we like to see new things. So he was trying to impress upon them why is Chazara important, and he was arguing that in order to really appreciate Torah, we need to learn Chazara. And he told them the following story. There was a volume of Gemara which was found after World War II. Most of the pages were worn, some of them were ripped, and is apparently owned by a person named Yosef Hatzair, Yosef the Young One. At least that's the way that this person described himself. Who was he? Where did he live? What did he do? We will never know. But what we do know about him is what he left in his Gemara. It was a Gemara Nazir. And on the last page where it says Hajran Allah Masechta Nazir Vahadrachalan, so he signed it Lag BaOmer 1942. He made a siyum on Masechta Nazir Lag BaOmer 1942. And next to the signature he wrote, I'm eternally grateful to Hashem that I've been privileged to complete Maseches Nazir for the second time. But Avakesh Slicha Me Ribon HaOlamim. I beg forgiveness from Hashem. Shelo lamati masechta zu be'ion kemosh ar masechtos. I did not learn this masechta with the depth that I was accustomed to learning other masechtos. I'm sorry that I couldn't concentrate so well and delve into the words. The treacherous conditions did not allow me to do so. Yosef Hatzair, Lag BaOmer 1942. Sometimes we get caught in the habit of treating Torah the same way that we treated anything else that we studied for the last, you know, for the last 18, 19 years of our lives. But Torah is not a study. Torah needs to be a lifestyle. and the commitment and the seriousness that we treat Torah needs to be to the level of Kihem Chayeno, which means that if my life was on the line. I remember one time me and Rav Jake were learning in the Gris Kolel, and there was a guy, Joey Tavish. I have no idea where he is today, but he told us the following example. Somebody went to either Socrates or Aristotle, or Socrates. He went to Socrates and he said, "Now, Socrates, you're getting old. What's going to happen after you? What's going to happen after you die? Who's going to be able to pass on your tradition and to represent all the knowledge that you've been accumulating? All I want to be that guy. How about me and you? We go to a secluded place now. You teach me everything you know, and I'll be able to. You'll have a legacy. I'll be able to promote, you know, postpartum everything that you stood for." "Nah, you can't do it. The guy was begging him. Finally, Socrates said, "Okay, fine, let's do it. Let's go to a secluded place." So he starts walking him. They go through. They walk to the outskirts of town. You know, and he's. The guy's like, "Oh, it's a really good place. It's really quiet." He's like, "No, not yet." They go into the forest. "Not yet." They keep on walking through the forest. You know, they're walking for hours. Finally, they get to a lake. It's really quiet. The guy's like, "Wow, Socrates is really smart. This place is awesome. If there's ever a place to learn all the knowledge in the world, this is going to be it." Socrates keeps on going. Walks into the water. The guy's like, "Ugh. Yo, Socrates, you know, what's going on over here?" Keeps on walking, knee high. You want to know all my knowledge?" The guy's like, "Yeah." "So come, follow me." Chest high, neck high. The guy's like, "Whoa, you know, did you lose it yet? Like, what's going on over here?" He keeps on going. Finally, Socrates turns around and in an instant takes the guy's head and he shoves it under the water. And the guy's like, you know, he's like flailing around. He's like, "Whoa." Now, Socrates is holding him. He's like, "Hold him under the water." The guy's like, "Whoa, what's going on over there?" He's like, you know, Pastor Shlomo, we should never be in this experience. We've seen it. We've seen it on TV and we know what it's like. Now, after like, you know, a minute and a half, let's say, the guy's like all blue. He's, you know, yanks him out of the water. "Are you out of your mind? What's the matter with you? Are you crazy?" Socrates says to him, "When you were under the water, how did you feel?" "What do you mean, how did I feel? I was like, well, a crazy old man. How did I get myself messed up with this guy? It's crazy." "Yeah, but how did you feel? What were you thinking?" He's like, "Well, you know, why were you fighting with me so much?" He's like, "What do you mean? I wanted to live. I needed air. I was dying. I wanted to live." "You fought hard?" He's like, I try to fight as hard as I could." When you want knowledge as badly as you wanted that air, then come talk to me. Until then, you don't really want it. And he walked out. When we look at ourselves and we ask what's really important in our lives, so a lot of times, "Rabbi, I'm not feeling Torah. I'm not feeling Gemara. It's so boring. I don't get it. I don't this." Maybe part of the reason why we don't feel it is because we don't really want it that badly. If we get it, I'll spend a year in yeshiva. If I get it, great. If I don't get it, okay. You know, I'll go to college. I'll keep Shabbos. Maybe I'll put on my tefillin every day. You know, I'll give God a wink and a wave, and we'll call it a day. But if we want to feel Torah, and you want to feel connected to Torah, so we have to want it as badly as... Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. It just happens to be that it's tonight. I'm saying this because yesterday was Yisro, and those were the questions that I asked, but... Tonight, whether it's right or wrong, we're not talking about right now, but tonight, guys are going to stay up till 1:30 in the morning. And then they're going to go watch a football game out in some forest. They're going to come back at 5 whatever. And, you know, probably, if I had to guess, probably sleep for a large part of the morning, even though it says Socrates is going to officially, morning says is going to officially start at 10:15 tomorrow. All right, listen, if I get up, great. If I don't get up, also great. If I get up for Socrates, 8:45 is a weird time because then you have to sleep 2 hours and go back to sleep 2 hours. You know, if I get it, fine. If I don't get it, all right, what are you going to do? I'll get it on Monday. Get married one day. wife loves me, fine. If she doesn't love me, okay, whatever. She'll love me on Monday. What's the, you know, love me on Tuesday. What's the big deal? If there's something that's really important to us, so then we need to... There's no such thing as if I get it, then fine. If I don't get it, then also fine. Sometimes we need to look. Maybe our sticking our heads under the water, maybe that's tonight. I'm not telling anybody not to go. Go if you want to go. Make the decision to go. But then also make the decision that, okay, I watched a football game, which maybe was important, and you know it's not because I'm not a sports fan. But the same way that I'm extending myself to go watch a football game, I'm going to extend myself to make sure that I'm learning tomorrow morning. And maybe the same way that I'm extending tonight to do something that's a little bit not natural, so that I can stay up to watch a football game. So maybe one night this week, or every night, or one night a week for the rest of my life, maybe one night a week I should stay up late and learn Torah. Because I know that I could do it because I did it for a Saints cult. Don't not go. Go. But learn the lesson of what we could do for Torah while we're, you know, while we're there. Chazal tell us, Estakel be'araisu bar'yama, that God looked at the Torah and then created the world. Which means, we spoke about this before, but that means that the Torah existed before the world existed. When was the Torah created? Is the Torah existed before the world existed? When was Torah created? And I think the answer is, I don't think Torah was created. Torah existed eternally. What do you mean Torah existed eternally? Only God exists eternally. Right. And Torah is God. The reason why we learn Torah is because the more Torah I learn, the more God I'm going to know. Torah is God. God existed eternally. Torah existed. Torah is not about, here's the rule book, this is what you have to do. Torah is about, if you want to understand God, spend your time learning Torah. Yeah, I don't get it all the time. You're not going to get your wife all the time either. In fact, most of the time you might not get her. But it doesn't matter, you don't walk out the door because we don't get her. Okay, but if I want to have a relationship with somebody, so sometimes I do things I don't get. That's normal. But what does that mean for us? That if we have a neshama, and a neshama is a piece of God, so that means that every single person, as long as we believe that we're unique, that means every single person has a unique piece of Torah inside ourselves. Which means that part of our job in this world, right, Yosef, part of our job of Kavod HaTorah, right, part of that job is that we have a piece of Torah that only we could bring out into the world. If anybody was irrelevant or anybody was redundant, they wouldn't exist. But if I have a neshama that's unique, so then there's only a piece of Torah that only I could bring out into the world. My grandfather, Olav Hashem, I used to tell him Divrei Torah all the time. So one time I told him it's Divrei Torah, and he said to me, "It's nice Divrei Torah, it argues on Rashi." I said to him, "But if I'm only allowed to agree with Rashi all the time, then what's the point of me being on the world? You had Rashi exist already. What do you need me for?" Every single Jew as a neshama has a piece of Torah that only they could bring out into the world. But it could be that the only way that we're ever going to do that is only if we put in some effort. Only if we put in some sacrifice. You know why Moshe didn't quote Yisro in Sefer Devar? To have an appellate court system? Any idiot could have come up with that idea. Of course you get help. Of course you get an appellate court system. Of course Moshe had that idea. But if Moshe had that idea, so then why are we making such a big stink about it yesterday when we read Yisro? It's not about what Yisro said. It wasn't the context of Yisro's words. But it was that Yisro said. The fact that he made a statement, that he contributed to Torah, that is a strong message that we all need to learn. Torah is not, let me sit in cheer and get spoon-fed. Torah is about, what can I create and what can I add? But in order to do that, we need effort. Moshe didn't need to quote Yisro, because of course Moshe had the idea. But the fact that Yisro made a statement was the chiddush.
Because up to that point, Torah only went from God to Moshe to Bnei Yisrael. Now Yisrael, for the first time, was coming to say, I don't care if even you worshipped all the Avodah Zarahs in the world. I don't care if you're working for a living. That's not what's important. What's important is, do I believe that I have something important in my neshama that I need to contribute? And the message was so important that before Hashem gave the Torah, Hashem took this Yisrael story and plopped it right in front of Matan Torah to say there is no such thing as Matan Torah unless we believe Lo Bashamayim Hi, unless we believe that Torah is there for us too, for us to contribute to. Which means that if I live my life and I'm so busy sleeping, and I'm so busy working, and I'm so busy being so bored and angry and disinterested and catering to my own pleasures, that I don't contribute my piece of Torah, so not only am I cheating myself, but I'm cheating everybody. Torah then won't be shalem. Torah then won't be whole. It makes me crazy. Guys, we have guys over for Shabbos sometimes. You notice you have something to say? No, I didn't really learn anything this week. You didn't learn anything this week? You spent an entire week in yeshiva, you have nothing to say? Forget about it. It doesn't have to be on Parsha. But you have nothing? You sat in shir for an entire week and you can't even repeat one line? You can't share one line from Gemara Pesachim? You can't share one thought that Rav Asher or Rav Uri or Rav Dudi said in an afternoon shir? You can't... nothing from night? Nothing from sicha? Nothing from... How could that be? Nothing? I have nothing to say? Where's our piece of Torah? I could spend a whole week in yeshiva and nothing to say? You go, forget my house, you go to anybody's house for Shabbos. Nothing to say? I wasn't konet Torah enough? I didn't own anything in Torah for an entire week? That I have nothing to say? That's my head underwater. We say in Ma'ariv, Kihem Chayeno. Okay, yeah, sometimes the Chazan says it so quickly, we don't even realize what we're saying. You know, maybe, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a black marker, I'll go over to all the Siddurim, and I'll start crossing it out, Kihem Chayeno. Because I don't really believe Kihem Chayeno, because my head is not underwater. If I get the Torah, fine. If I don't get it, maybe I'll get it a different day. Where's the Kihem Chayeno? I have nothing to say? Is there any chance that anybody long-term could like Torah if I'm going to go through an entire year of yeshiva and I'll have nothing to say? Your brain will say to you, don't waste your time doing it anymore. Because why are you wasting your time? You have nothing to say anyway. You spent a whole year and you have nothing. But if you spend a whole year and we have something, because we do chazaros, and there's no such thing as going to a shir and not being able to repeat after that shir what happened, then your brain will say, wow, look how much I have. This is worth my time. And forget about Shabbos. Why is it only Shabbos? I'm going out to town. Let's say I'm going to meet my friends. So before the movie, or before the meat platter, or before whatever it is that we're doing, so before I do that, so why don't you say, listen to this idea that we had. That I don't have an answer. Maybe let's talk about it. Why can't we have something that we talk to our friends about? And we're sitting up in the dorm. So instead of listening to the music, and instead of hiding the laptop or the DVD player, instead of doing nothing, why can't we discuss some kind of idea? Kihem chayenu. Why can't we have it? Yesterday at the meal, and for those people who were there, you don't have to share what it was about. But we were at the meal yesterday. Great idea we were talking about, that God's knowledge in the world and how do we see God, it was awesome. And there was a guy there from a different yeshiva, And one of the guests that we had was the rabbi from that yeshiva, and the rabbi said to him, could you ever imagine guys in our yeshiva having a discussion like this? And the kid answered, no, it's too deep. I was like, I'm going to put that on the brochure. But why is that? What, we can't have Torah discussions? If this is my heart's beating all the time, my lungs are breathing all the time, so why can't my Torah be flowing all the time? And maybe it's because I never give it enough attention to have a coherent thought about it. But if instead of wasting all my time
you know, walking through the, you know, walking through the building and upstairs and downstairs. I need to get a drink. I need to go to the bathroom. I need to, if I would pay enough attention to Torah, so I might find that I have enough integrity and I can make real statements. We all have a piece of Torah that we need to contribute. That is Kabbalah Satorah. Let Kabbalah Satorah not just be something that we read about in shul yesterday, and that hopefully we heard in shul, maybe we didn't hear. Well, let's make a Kabbalah Satorah. Right now, I'm making Torah a priority in my life. It does not mean I'm going to learn in kol for the rest of my life. If you do, great. It does not mean that. It does not mean I'm not going to go to the Super Bowl tonight. If you don't, great also. But what it does mean is that I'm going to start making Torah a priority. I'm going to give Torah at least enough credence as I give the Super Bowl. If I'm staying up tonight to watch the Super Bowl, I'll stay up at night to learn Torah. If I want life as much as dunking my head under the water, that's as much as I'm going to want Torah. And I'm not going to be embarrassed when I'm hanging out with my friends. Or, you know, if you have a girlfriend. And we were, you know, since a few thoughts ago, so now when I'm hanging out with my girlfriend, we go to the Kotel all the time. Because that's what we do. So on the way to the Kotel, instead of talking about the nothing that we talk about, I assume she's in seminary if she's here. So why don't you talk Torah? Trust me. It'll clarify things about your relationship more than you ever imagined. That's Kabbalah Satorah. I'm going to learn Torah so clearly that I'll have what to talk about. My brain will be on so I can make an intelligent statement about Torah. Because that's my life. That's what I'm about. When I go to somebody's Shabbos table, it's not going to be, oh, you want to come for Shabbos, make sure you have something good to say. Of course I'm going to have something good to say. Because how could I not? When I'm going to hang out with my friends, of course I'm going to have something to say. Why should we talk about stupidity? Let's talk about hanging out with my girlfriend. Of course I'm going to have something to say. I'm going to send an email to my parents. I'm talking to my parents. Well, you think your parents are going to... You know, oh, listen to what I learned today in yeshiva. Nah, I don't really want to hear. If anybody's parents say them that, pass them over my way. But I don't think I will need to have too many discussions. Why? Because it's my parents. I don't talk Torah with them. It's not what I do. Let's have a Kabbalah Satorah. Not because I'm going to change my life plan. Not because I'm going to change who I hang out with. I'm just going to change my conversation topic. I'm just going to reprioritize. You're at some of Nevinu Shabbat Shemayim Shabbat Hashem as well. That in this world when there's so many things going on outside of Torah that catches our eye and has us interested, that Hashem gives me the strength to live my life according to the ideals of Kabbalah Satorah, of Yisro's contribution, so that I could grow up and contribute my select piece of Torah.